Nuance Mid-Cap Value Semi-Annual Call. My name is Victoria, and I'll be your operator for today's call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. Please note that this conference is being recorded. Now, I'll turn the call over to Paul Galepsy. Paul, you may begin.
Thanks, Victoria. Good afternoon, everyone. As Victoria mentioned, this is Paul Galepsy, Vice President and Client Portfolio Manager at Nuance Investments. I want to thank everyone for joining us today for our Nuance Midcap Value Semiannual Update Call. In the email invitation to today's call, there was a link to a presentation that we will be referring to during the call. For any reason, if you do not have the presentation, you can email us at client.services@nuanceinvestments.com, and we will email it over. Before we begin the discussion, I do want to let you know that this presentation may include statements regarding the intent, belief, or current expectations of our portfolio management team. Actual results may differ materially from such forward-looking statements due to a number of factors, including changes in general economic conditions, market liquidity, market volatility, and other market, financial, or governmental uncertainties. During the call today, we'll be giving an update on the firm and the team. We'll also go through a summary of the investment process and updated performance. We will conclude our prepared remarks with the 2016 year-end review and an outlook of the portfolio going forward. We will then open up the call to Q&A. With that, I'll turn the call over to Scott Moore, our President and Chief Investment Officer. Scott?
Thanks, Paul, and good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. As Paul indicated, my name is Scott Moore, and I'm the President and Chief Investment Officer of Nuance Investments. On page 2 of your presentation, you can see our agenda as Paul outlined. Again, we'll provide an update on the firm, our team, provide a 2016 summary, excuse me, and of course look forward to 2017 and talk about what we're seeing in the marketplace today. On page 3 is a short summary and recap of our firm, Nuance Investments. We established the firm in 2008 as a classic value boutique. Today, we manage close to $1.6 billion using our classic value approach of identifying leading business franchises, trading at a discount to our internally derived view of fair value. We have three products. We have our mid-cap value strategy, which we're talking about today. That product is closing in on around $600 million. It's been our fastest growing product of the last year. That product will close to new clients at $2 billion. We have a concentrated value strategy, which is almost $1 billion and actually will close at around $1 billion, so it's close to its closing. And then we have a nuanced concentrated long short strategy that we launched a little over a year ago in last December 31st. That product is doing nicely and has actually had a pretty good year for its first year in existence. A reminder to everyone that each of these products are capacity constrained to position Nuance and its clients for future returns, as everybody on this call would certainly expect from our company. On page 4, you can see our investment team with over 60 cumulative years of experience. This is a stable group with myself, Chad Baumler, our two senior investment analysts, Adam West and Lori Kirby, all having very cohesive experience utilizing the process, which I'll detail in just a minute. I would also note the addition of Darren Schreier to our team. I mentioned Darren to this group in the summertime, as he had just joined us as a CPA from the University of Texas MBA program. As a reminder, Darren will be covering the healthcare space for our team, and he's been with us since the summer again. He's off to an outstanding start covering that space. On page 5, you can see a single-page schematic of our investment process. This process has not changed since the inception of Nuance, and you can be assured that it will not change going forward. Our belief very strongly is that consistency of process is incredibly critical to allow us to have consistent execution and long-term risk-adjusted performance. And this process is at the heart of not only our historical performance, but our ability to provide you with alpha going forward as well. The five-step process begins with a quantitative analysis to identify potential leading business franchises that our team of analysts studies in depth. Next, we study the competitive positions of each and every company that we own for our clients to ensure that they are not market share losers or going through significant competitive transitions. If those two things are happening, that is the typical cause of capital losing value traps, and we certainly want to avoid those at all costs. Our goal is sound and stable competitive positions, which we typically define as number one or number two market share position businesses in the company's specific niche, and again, sustainable levels of number one or number two market share positions. As a relatively simple example of what we're trying to avoid in that step of the process, we have avoided now for quite a while coal-related stocks due to the consistent market share losses to natural gas, wind, solar, and other sustainable forms of energy. Even the dominant players, the largest number one market share position in coal production, we have avoided that company, those companies as well, due to that consistent market share loss, which we identified quite a long time ago. The third step of our process, assuming a company gets through our competitive work, is our proprietary financial statement analysis, which we call normalizing or creating a complete set of mid-cycle financial statements. The goal is to study historical returns on capital, balance sheet strength, capital allocation habits, talking with companies, their peers, and other industry experts, and determine not what the company will make in the next quarter or over the next year, but rather what they should make in mid-cycle given the current tangible assets and capital that they have on the balance sheet today. We believe that this normalization work gives us better levels of earnings, dividends, and cash flows in which to value a business relative to simple trailing 12 months or what Wall Street might expect over the next year or two. And that lends itself to our big picture philosophy of buying and selling companies when they're under-earning their potential due to transitorily negative reasons, allowing us to buy companies when they're out of favor, limited downside risk, and significant upside potential. Finally, in the process, once the normalization work is done, we perform a full valuation study using those normalized financial statements. We study price to earnings on our normal earnings, enterprise value to EBITDA using normal EBITDA, dividend yields using normal sustainable levels of payout ratios on our normal earnings, and of course, unlevered free cash flow yields, which we think is a pretty unique valuation tool. Importantly, we study not just what the business is worth, but also the potential downside value risk one stock at a time. We do that by analyzing historical recessions, historical one-off periods of negativity, where our competitively advantaged company might have some sort of one-off transitorily negative period. And we look to see what valuation multiples the market afforded our best-in-class businesses during those difficult periods. This focus not only on fair value, but also the downside, I think I've always thought was relatively unique to Nuance and believe that has contributed greatly to our top-tier risk-adjusted returns since our inception and certainly over time. So with that backdrop, how was 2016 and how was our performance? Has our performance been since our inception? Turning to page 6 of our presentation book, first, 2016 was a very solid year for us. We were up 21.05% net of fees versus our primary benchmark, the Russell Midcap Value Index, up 19.99%. That marks the sixth time in our 8 years, and if you include the stub year of 2008, the seventh year in 9 years that we have outperformed our primary benchmark. As for the long term, as we enter into our ninth year here at Nuance, we are pleased with our 16.99% net of fee APR versus the Russell Midcap Value Index. Again, our primary benchmark up 15.44 and the S&P 500 up 13.28. Lastly, on performance, page 7 shows our performance versus peers over the long term. You can see we are 5th percentile versus the Morningstar Midcap Value Peer Group, 7th percentile versus the Lipper Midcap Value Peer Group. Importantly, if you'll look at the middle data column on page 7, which is our standard deviation, we are among the least risky products in both of those peer groups as measured by standard deviation, which is our internal benchmark for how to measure risk versus our peers. Putting those two numbers together into a Sharpe ratio, our internally focused risk-adjusted return measure, you can see we are first percentile versus both peer groups since our inception in 2008. So on page 8, what drove our performance versus our primary benchmark, the Russell Midcap Value Index, in 2016? First, We would note that many of our highlighted pockets of opportunity from our call a year ago did indeed work out. Probably to emphasize, one of the biggest emphasis last year was on banks and finance companies, BOK Financial. We talked about a great deal, Commerce Bank Shares, Northern Trust, and Charles Schwab were some excellent performers and companies that we felt like were under-earning their potential a year ago and that the market was not recognizing the value in those companies. Clearly, fast forward today, and that pretty contrarian view a year ago paid off handsomely for us and contributed significantly to our performance. A year ago, we were also highlighting our primary utility holding, National Fuel Gas, ticker NFG, and that stock did very, very well for us this year as well. And then lastly, I would note our rather eclectic group of industrial holdings over the last 12 months. Not a lot of true, serious, historically thought of as clean industrial companies, but rather a couple of agriculture and a couple of transportation-related companies, John Deere, Lindsay Corporation, a great irrigation systems company, and Hub Group, ticker symbol HUBG, all did quite well and helped us in the nice 2016. There certainly were some negatives. There always are every year. First, Frank's International, multi-year holding for us and one of our better attributing companies a year ago, suffered from the second year of a downturn in energy-related spending. We continue to like Frank's as they are gaining share through the downturn, which is a critical component of what we're looking to see, and they have a best-in-class balance sheet with net cash on that balance sheet to help us during this downturn. Also, just a modest underperformer, Smith & Nephew, a leading supplier of orthopedics, was hurt largely due to political uncertainty, and we've added to that position on that weakness later in 2016. And then I would mention cash was a drag on performance. In such an up year, when you have greater than normal cash, and we did, we averaged probably 7 to 8% cash throughout the year, there is going to be a cash drag. Clearly, we're pleased that that didn't hold us back from beating our primary benchmark during the year. Our final topic today is the 2017 outlook. And you can turn to page 9 to see our team's notes on 2017. First, we would emphasize that, as I've alluded to before, we are clearly in the latter stages of the economic and valuation cycle by our work. And that suggests that the opportunity set is indeed narrower as we look into 2017. Those of you who have read some of the quarterly commentary that I've done over time, I'm sure this isn't a surprise. During those periods, however, opportunities certainly always exist. These are not abnormal periods. These are normal periods. We are seeing opportunities in select healthcare stocks like Patterson Companies, Smith & Nephew, as I mentioned before, another orthopedics company we like quite a bit, Globus Medical. Following a year that saw election results cause significant uncertainty regarding the future of the Affordable Care Act, we saw healthcare be the worst performing sector in the space, and this is an area we're spending a great deal of time on, and we're liking what we're seeing within that space. We continue to like select energy services stocks like Frank's International. It continued to be one of the few spaces in the economy where clear cyclical under-earnings exist in today's world. That is clearly one of the factors, one of the many factors we look for are more group-wide cyclical under-earnings, and it's there still in some select energy services names like Frank's. Lastly, I would note that one-off stocks are always popping up year to year, and we would highlight this year Heartland Express, ticker HTLD. Heartland is a dominant mid-length haul trucker based in Iowa. Company is basically debt-free, under-earning due to a pretty classic overspending on the fleet over the last couple of years and the subsequent glut of supply in trucks, which has led to pricing problems within the trucking sub-industry as a whole. The company today is earning about 70 cents of earnings, 80 cents next year, according to Wall Street. We believe due to the pricing issues related to the oversupply of trucks today, that the company is under-earning its potential, and we believe more normal is closer to $1.20. We were buying the stock relatively recently for our clients at $17 to $18 or 14 to 15 times debt-free earnings, versus our view of the market, the nuanced market, if you will, closer to 20 to 21 times normal earnings. So another one-off with a great balance sheet, an excellent competitive position, and a good company that has one-off company-specific issues or sub-industry issues causing that under-earnings, giving us a good opportunity to buy a company with limited downside and significant upside versus the market opportunities. So those are the opportunities. Where are the risks? The biggest risk and the area that I've been talking about really the last 6 months or so with my clients and I've been writing about is really leverage, sneaky leverage in non-finance companies continues to creep up. Many industrial consumer staples, consumer cyclical companies have boosted their net debt to EBITDA by a half to up to as much as 2 points versus their histories. Many companies appear to be trying to manufacture earnings growth through this leverage. Our opinion is that this raises the risk levels in these companies significantly, and investors will be quite surprised at the lack of downside support in these more leveraged companies during difficult periods for that individual company. In general, a reminder that leverage exacerbates downside risk significantly, and we're seeing sharp examples of companies forgetting that fact in today's market. Further risks we would focus on, financials and banks have been a lowering weighting for us following the very significant period of outperformance, really reversing that pocket of opportunity we saw, you know, in the last couple of years. These businesses are generally fully valued. Some are significantly overvalued, and discounting today significant expansion of returns on capital, and we think significant reductions in regulatory rules as well. We think most of that is now priced in to full value or even significantly overvalued status. So you've seen our weights in financials and banks be reducing over the last quarter or two. Next on the risk list, extended valuations in technology and consumer cyclicals, very classic to late cycle periods based on our team's experience. These are more cyclical businesses, companies that get returns on capital that approach their historical peak levels, and then the market gets excited and puts extensive multiples, expanded multiples on these over-earning level of earnings and EBITDA. Very classic to what we have seen in many late cycle periods. So those are businesses and spaces where we're not finding the opportunity, so we're underweight those spaces. And then finally, on the risk front, I would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the political issues that are going on. They are quite real. They have our attention for sure. The ramifications of the new president and all of the changes that this will potentially cause, bigger picture, could be both good and bad. At this time, there is so much unknown that answering questions about the political ramifications to individual companies is almost impossible. What will happen to earnings and cash flows if taxes indeed get cut, if the Affordable Care Act is reversed, if border taxes are added? We do know that certainly these things will have an impact. The question is, what are the specifics? And right now, we just don't have the specifics. So I think the most important question our clients should be asking us is, what are we doing to prepare? And the answer is that we are creating what-if scenarios for each of our approved list of companies and weighing the range of outcomes so we can act swiftly if change does indeed occur. I would note very clearly for everyone that the vast majority of our companies, the good versus the bad delta or what-ifs, is largely plus or minus 10% versus our current valuation and downside estimates. So while they certainly can have an impact, I don't personally believe, based on what we have read, studied, and the scenarios that we're creating, we don't expect to see wholesale changes in the values of these very sound, very mature businesses that have dealt with political, economic, and global change for a very, very long time. But it is important to note that they can have some sort of impact. We would also note that we do not anticipate any change to the competitive positions of our leaders due to the political changes that are being discussed. And that's actually a real key driver in the fact that, you know, the valuation change really, we believe, for the most part, will be plus or minus 10% around our current fair value and downside values. In sum, our portfolio today is comprised of leading business franchises with excellent and mostly under-leveraged balance sheets. I think that is very critical in late cycles. Roughly, on our normalized earnings, the portfolio is around 15 to 16 times our normal earnings versus a market of 20 to 21 times, and we feel pretty good about that risk-reward versus the market opportunities. With that, that concludes my prepared remarks, and I will open it up to any questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone phone. Our first question comes from Bethany Stein from PNC. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bethany.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I wonder if you could give us a little bit more detail about what you're finding in healthcare. I see that's been an area that has become a much larger percentage of the portfolio, and you had touched on a couple of the names, but if you could talk a little bit more, that would be great.
Yeah, so it's really been an across-the-board uncertainty that has caused quite a few of the healthcare stocks to underperform the market significantly, and as such, lead us to what we think of as very good risk rewards. I mentioned Smith & Nephew, one of the leading orthopedic companies in the world, modest under earnings due to some currency related issues in particular. So that company is one that we think is, again, you know, undervalued today, largely due to political uncertainties, and certainly looks better than the general market opportunities. A recent addition, again, due to a lot of this political uncertainty, is a company called Globus Medical, ticker symbol GMED, debt-free business, share gainer largely in kind of the spinal part of the orthopedics world, gaining a lot of share on Medtronic, really well-positioned business, great returns on capital. We're able to buy the company on our normalized earnings at about 17 to 18 times our normal earnings, with the market kind of closer to 20 to 21 times. So it's very much a one-off company situation, but that right now is where we're seeing a few pockets of opportunity. And again, what's happened is just that some uncertainty related to the Affordable Care Act has caused stocks to come down and given us a little opportunity versus the market.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then just quickly, just turning to the information technology sector, there it looks as though, you know, you've brought that weight down dramatically. So is that, I know you have, you've talked cash at about 7 or 8%. Is that an area that you're finding value, or as you had said, you're really reaching these high historic multiples, and so there's that probably we won't see you initiating any positions just yet in there?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Over the years, we actually have a positive bias towards our favorite technology companies. We think, you know, just due to the, you know, the way these technology companies are gaining traction, taking share from old school businesses, we see a lot of growth over time in semiconductor capital equipment companies in general. But that doesn't mean there is not a cycle. That doesn't mean that valuations can't get, you know, really aggressive over time for these businesses. Today, what we're seeing in companies like CCMP, Cabot Micro, which we just sold this year, MKSI, which is MKS Instruments, which we just sold this year, has really been kind of a two-pronged where it's time for us to take profits for our clients and move on to better risk rewards. And that is, we've seen the returns on capital go well above the historical, kind of think of it as our normalized returns on capitals for these businesses. And with that, the market gets awfully excited and they start planting very expensive multiples on those closer to peak levels of earnings and EBITDA. That means there's an awful lot of downside risk in those stocks today. We've had a substantial position in technology now for quite a while, and for us to now be, you know, not totally void, but very close, tells you that really we think this particular space just doesn't have a lot of downside protection. We'll be looking for some volatility, you know, whether it's one-off or whether it's an entire space, you know, throughout this year to put a little money back to work in that space. We certainly like it over the long term, but right now there's just not enough downside protection for us to feel good about putting our clients' capital to work in that space.
Okay, great. And then actually I'll follow up just with one other sector. So within the energy sector, most of your focus is on the servicers versus the producers. You know, how are you? What are your thoughts surrounding, you know, the recent OPEC production cut? Do you think might have been a little bit too late? You know, at this point, you might see the North American producers sort of filling in that gap of the production that's taking offline. So do you see this as an area of recovery, or at this point, you know, maybe not?
Yeah, I think what we're seeing is, you know, within the entire energy complex, our favorite businesses are the equipment and services companies, the companies with the engineering, the companies that have had sustainable competitive positions now for 10, 20, 30, 40 years. So it's companies like FTI, FMC Technologies, it's companies like Drillquip, it's companies like Frank's International, which I mentioned in my comments, companies that have been around a very long time, servicing various, think of them as hole drillers, if you will, various E&P companies for a very long time. What we focus on is not really the day-to-day. Noise is not the right phrase, but noise with OPEC. It's really the returns on capital for the best-in-class energy equipment and services companies. Today, these companies are making basically no earnings, some EBITDA, but not very much. And we just don't believe for the higher technology, higher engineering component of what they do within the context of the overall energy segment that is sustainable. That's due largely to where oil prices have been over the last year or two. We've certainly rebounded off the bottom, and we're starting to see some very early lights towards energy spending popping back up here over the last basically quarter. I wouldn't really say two quarters, really the last quarter. I think we're in the very early stages of seeing some normalcy come back to that energy space. So we do have reasonable exposure in that space, with Frank's International being our favorite. Really, really dominant market share position in the highly engineered tubular systems business. $2 to $3 of net cash per share on the balance sheet. Really is a company that, frankly, could be consolidated away over time, although that's not what we're buying it for, but really under-earning its potential, and we think, you know, as those earnings improve, we could see a nice move in that stock, as well as a couple of others.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Appreciate the question.
And our next question comes from John Clunan from Waypoint Advisors. Please go ahead.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having this call. I was wondering what your cash position is right now.
Yeah, our cash position today is about 9%. Our peak cash position is 10%. Normal throughout the course of the life of Nuance Midcap Value, we probably average 3 to 6, somewhere in that neighborhood. So we have a little more than normal today, and that is a direct reflection of the latter stages of the valuation cycle that we talked about, and the more selective opportunity set that we're seeing, where we get that combination of a great company with downside protection and upside potential. So we have a little more cash than normal. That is not something that we take lightly, but we think right now it is prudent to just be a little bit patient with where valuations are, you know, across these companies that we've been following for a very, very long time. For most of them, we're closer to peak valuations than troughs, not all. But because of that phenomenon, you know, we feel like we should be pretty prudent and think a little bit more about protection of capital right now than other times in the market cycle.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thanks for the question.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. And I am not showing any questions at this time.
Great. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. As a reminder, you can stay up to date on all of our strategies by visiting our website, nuanceinvestments.com, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.